Welcome back to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name is Mike Moody, and this is a Patreon preview episode of the podcast, which you can listen to in full by signing up at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. You can sign up at the $1 level to get the bonus content, and at the $2 level for the bonus content plus an invite to our Slack community, where you can hang with other Star Trek fans, get access to live watch parties, all kinds of cool stuff happening there. We also have a $5 tier that gets you all of that, plus a few more bonus gifts. So please join us at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. You can also visit our podcast website to get all the free episodes of the podcast at StarTrekPod.co. We really appreciate you listening and supporting us on Patreon. It's a great way to help us continue to produce the pod. And here's a preview of our Patreon pod about Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Enjoy.
Oh, man.
Okay, let's dive into this movie with some hot freaks.
Hot freaks!
Okay, rock, paper, scissors on the hot freaks? Or
I'm happy to start. I think it looked amazing. I think the production design was incredible.
Grant's eyes just popped out of his pockets.
I thought some of the aliens looked incredible. I thought the grittiness of it was interesting. I thought the set design was cool. I'm obsessed with the kitty cat woman at the bar, who to me is like our first galactic drag queen who's dancing on a bar with
three
pool tables with water. And yeah, so I think while some of the special effects were not as good as Magic and Light because they were not available, they were working on Indiana Jones. I thought the production design looked really good, but the dialogue was very hard for me to make it through on many levels.
Wow.
So that's my hot freak.
That is a hot ass freak.
What?
Grant, I want to hear your reaction because your eyes are popping out of your sockets. Share your pain.
Let's take a step back. When Mike told us about this movie, venturing out from the Genesis trilogy, he said, it doesn't have as good of reviews, but don't worry. It's a short one. It's only an hour and 40 minutes. And oh my God, 4 hours later, this movie is still going. Just would not end. This thing is so long for an hour and 40 minutes. And
the original cut was 2 hours, 10 minutes.
What?
What the original else did
they cut in there? Just more cultish like garbage. This movie was bad, and it wasn't bad in that fun way. It was bad in that, oh, do I have to keep watching this? I would say around midway it got a little bit exciting, and then it went back to being really, really bad again. I disagree with Mariah about the special effects, about the set design, about the characters, about the costume work, everything. Just end-to-end awfulness. And I was like, I don't understand how this followed 4. It seemed like they did have a lot more, like tighter special effects instead of it looking like they had a picture of a ship on a piece of paper that they were moving around a painting in the background. I don't know what it was, but everything felt like it was like a suited version of this movie. And the mountain climbing at the very beginning, everything.
I also just watched that like free climb movie and I was like, is he doing the free climb from Free Climb before there was Free Climb? Like,
there is no way he could climb that fucking mountain.
No.
The body double didn't even look like him at all. They didn't even try to have a body double that looked like him.
We introduce Shatner as a director. He decides the first shot of him is going to be just straight up the butt. It's just straight up at a butt. Like,
oh man. Yeah. This movie is rough. Mike.
Guys, I love this movie.
Stop.
There is a heavy...
There's nostalgia. I get it.
Heavy wave of nostalgia that keeps me from absolutely trashing this dumb movie. Like I said, this was the first Star Trek movie I ever saw in theaters. I was a small, very stupid child. And I had a fucking blast with it then. And it's kind of a comfort movie for me now. I know it's trash. I know it's poorly written. I know it's unfunny. I know it's nonsensical. It picks up and drops random themes over and over and never really stays the course. And that finale is just like nothing. But you know, sometimes you have a soft spot in your heart, or at least for at least
at a certain point, you have to put a sell on this
one too. Garbage movie. And this is mine. Yeah, I will say, even though Star Trek V is a trash follow-up to Star Trek IV, which is a great movie, and its attempts to be profound make it even more laughable, it does have some solid character moments from the core trio of Kirk, Spock, and Bones. And you can tell the whole cast is just like having a blast with this one, even though the material is just not good.
Oh, the Uhura scene when she's dancing and singing?
She apparently loved doing that. There's a lot of behind the scenes.
Great.
There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that led to this movie turning out the way it did. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, this is a kind of a brain dead movie that I can actually watch all day, every day. I'm a crazy person.
Did they all get their own hand in like writing a scene for themselves? Is that what's going on?
No, Shatner wanted to give everybody something to do, except Sulu, apparently.
Yeah, I will at least give credit that, like, oh, Uhura finally got to do something in a movie.
Yeah.
A few times until midway through, and then she's forgotten, like, all the other side characters are just gone.
Do you want me to jump into some of these facts?
No, I want to talk about this first before we go into the
facts. But I think the fun facts are, like, are fun to discuss within the realms of this, because I was scanning what you put, and there's, like, some extra, oh, there's more than I thought there was, but... Yeah, like the Sean Connery planet that they go to that was named for Sean Connery because they wanted Sean Connery, but then they couldn't get Sean Connery.
They tried like hell to get Sean Connery to play Cybok.
Yeah.
And he was just not returning their calls, and because he was doing the Indiana Jones movie. And so they rewrote the Eden planet. They renamed it Shakari as an in-joke because it sounds like Sean Connery.
Shakari is named after Sean Connery?
Yes.
Oh, there's this band named Enter Shakari. And I didn't know what that was like about. And I was like, oh, it must be like some mystical thing. But no, this band must just be named after this awful planet.
I don't see why not. Yes, Shatner says he got the idea of a false prophet searching for a false god by watching Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker on TV. That's where he got the story for this. He was grossed out by these dumb televangelists who said they had a special connection to God and tried to swindle people out of their money to get healing or whatever. And he thought it would be cool to write a character like that who comes face to face with a God they worship. But then the character finds out it's actually the literal devil. And then Kirk and the Enterprise have to fight the real devil, aka Satan. That was his first story for the movie.
Was that supposed to be Satan? I got no real
mention
of what that character at the end was supposed to be.
It's just an alien at the end.
It's like some alien that's been imprisoned, right? Some being.
It's some alien who's been in prison who shoots lasers out of his eyes, which means the lasers go wherever he's looking, but he constantly misses Shatner.
He got him in the chest and Shatner just kind of brushed it off. I'm like, was that?
And then when Shatner's running away, he just shoots the mountain next to him 100 times. I think he needs glasses.
I have this impression of like what the original series of Star Trek episodes are, and it seems like low budget, intentionally kind of corny at times because it's funnier that way. They recognize that they have low budget and they're just kind of playing into it. And this movie seemed like maybe it's doing that. I don't know, because if this was like a sincere effort, I don't understand it following that fourth movie, which actually seemed really well written, really pretty well acted, and avoided a lot of these singing scenes and just everything.
Row, row, row your boat.
All these jokes that just kept falling flat. And I was like, are they improvising everything and then taking the first take and going, sure, okay, next scene.
Well, apparently Paramount made Shatner, they they directed him to put a lot of comedy into the movie, and he wanted a darker film. So
it does feel it does feel conflicted, this movie.
Yeah,
the
tone is way off.
Didn't it also, like, they started writing it and then there was a writer's strike?
Yes.
And then they had to finish it. And then as soon as they started production, there was a Teamsters strike. Oh, and geez. So they had to use non-union Teamsters for shooting in Yosemite. And apparently there was, like, they had to use police escorts because they were afraid, like, people would, like, bomb the set for not using union. And, like, they would fly planes low over set to, like, screw with filming. And, like, everything got pushed back and production went over. And then they all were, like, passing out from heat exhaustion from filming in, like, the fucking desert. Like,
wow.
Yeah. It was a literal shit show.
Yeah, the script went through tons of changes right up to filming, probably during filming. And reportedly, the feeling on the production was that everyone knew the central story was crap and that the climax was just extremely anticlimactic. But I think Shatner writes about this in his book. They felt the chemistry of the crew would make the movie enjoyable for audiences, even though the story was no good. They were wrong.
Okay, good. I was like, did it sell you? You're the fan.
I do enjoy the chemistry of the crew, but you know, again, it's just nostalgia. I saw this as a kid in the big screen and I enjoyed it and I was dumb. I like all the riffing between the crew. I like the camp scenes, you know, I think that's fun. The central crew, like Kirk, Bones, and McCoy, get a lot to do with each other, even though, like, none of what they do has any bearing on the plot whatsoever when they're just goofing around together.
I'm kind of annoyed by it at this point.
Yeah.
You know, at this point in the movies, it just seems like this exclusive bro boys club thing of those three that, like, always just sets the other characters to the side. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It feels weird, right? Not to you guys. I'm like, oh, it's those three again, the elites, even though one's just like a regular doctor who just kind of gets folded into the club with, you know, the captain and his first mate.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see how, like, the show was able to write, I think, for the larger ensemble. But it's also, I think, easier to write for all of those characters week after week rather than trying to fit it all into a movie, because you can have, like, oh, this week the focus is going to be on Uhura and maybe on Sulu. And then next week we're back to, you know, the core three. But then the next week we're going to have, like, a weird alien who's in love with a different crew member. And so then we get this whole episode surrounding this situation. And I think it's probably difficult for them to try to figure out, at least this group of writers, to do a very good job of figuring out how to really utilize that ensemble cast to the best of its abilities. Like, even Scotty, who is this, like, brilliant engineer, is just, like, in the fucking, like, room, the, not the holodeck, what am I trying to say,
engineering,
it's not the where they beam in and out of the ship,
the transporter room.
So he's in the transporter room and he's got, like, two tools reaching across and is like, I'm fixing it as fast as I can, Captain. And, like,
pushing all the buttons.
Yeah. I was like, this seems really silly. And I love camp, but it was like when people who don't know what camp is trying to do camp.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the Met Gala ball all over again.
It sincerely felt improv at parts.
It's really dumbed down. Grant, you were saying about the central trio. I kind of like the sentiment that Kirk, Spock, and Bones have no family except for each other. And that's what they vocalize at the end of the movie. But we kind of already got that message from the last two movies. And those movies delivered that message much better. And it's just kind of, there's nothing new. There's nothing to say in this movie.
Right. I didn't know why they were, like, hammering that home once more. It was just kind of, I don't know. There were certain parts where I was like, oh, this is really predictable. What's going to happen? You guys are singing out of harmony. You're out of sync in a Row, Row, Row Your Boat song. Of all the songs you could pick, you went with Row, Row Your Boat because you don't have to pay licensing rights or something. I have no idea why that song was chosen. But The fact that they were singing that and they were out of sync, I was like, oh, I bet by the end of the movie they're gonna be in sync and singing that thing. And sure enough, and like, oh, they're talking about like not having family. I bet by the end they're gonna talk about how they have family again. And it just seems so dumbed down from themes in in previous movies. Not like the other ones were deep explorations of like philosophical questions, but still at this point I was just kind of like, huh, how did it come to this?
But the other ones really work the themes in with clever dialogue and in really smart ways. This one just introduces the same themes and abandons them, then kind of has a bookend at the end, like, hey, we're back to these themes and we've closed the loop. No.
Yeah.